So there's just kind of a couple of hadith up there. The first by the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which is that the simile of the one who learns in his childhood is like that of carving on stone. In a similar vein by Imam Ali alayhi salam is that verily the heart of a child is like an empty plot of land. It accepts whatever is planted there. And these are really crucial hadith that I think everybody needs to take away with them, because we know Islamically, but also from a psychological perspective, that whatever a child learns in those first early years lays the foundation for all their personality and character kind of for later on. So as parents, we need to ensure that we are the ones that are planting the seeds in our child's hearts or making the carvings on the stone of their heart, not the teachers or the other ideologies that are trying to get into our schools and do that for us. So relationship and sex education, what is it? From my experience, the majority of people are still very vague about what it is, as are actually the government, who are kind of pushing this through without actually offering us a very clear definition of what it is they're doing. I came across it just about a year and a half ago, and I kind of wanted to find out a bit more. I'd heard it was in the pipeline for a while, but the way I kind of look at things, nothing ever appears in a vacuum, so I wanted to know the larger agenda, the larger context that lies behind RSC. The only way I can describe it is that I felt like I'd fallen down a rabbit hole, a dark, nasty rabbit hole, and I was deeply shocked and disturbed. But what I've discovered, which is actually an international agenda to get sex education into all schools worldwide, RSC, if you like, is a UK brand of that. So in March 2017, the government, in their perhaps misplaced wisdom, have decided that from September 2020, what they're calling relationship and sex education is going to be compulsory. This is compulsory in all schools, okay? So it's not just state schools. It includes Islamic schools, faith schools, private schools, special needs schools, any school that you can think of in the UK. RSC is going to become a mandatory part of the curriculum. There are two components of it. There's relationship education and sex education. The difference between the two, again, the government is still very vague. They haven't actually hashed out properly what is going to be covered in sex education and relationship education. So it's a very blurred line, and we're still waiting further guidelines on that. However, relationship education is going to be taught to all children in this country who attend school from the ages of 4 years old and upwards. It is mandatory, and you have no right whatsoever to remove your child from these lessons. Sex education, or RSC, is going to be taught in secondary schools. However, the government are recommending schools teach sex education in primary, although parents will still have the right to remove their child. Sex education in secondary school, if you do want to take your child out of that component, you have to get the head teacher's approval, and it is up to the head teacher's discretion. And there are also calls for sort of slightly older children, just over the age of 15 or in the final kind of two terms of school at secondary, have the right to choose to attend sex education, even if their parents disagree with that. So as I said, it's becoming compulsory in September 2020. However, schools are encouraged to begin teaching this stuff early, and in reality, most schools are already introducing it, particularly the state schools. And I'm constantly getting parents kind of approaching me, saying, oh my God, my child learnt this today, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't actually have until 2020 to sit back and relax. It's happening now, unfortunately. And what I'm finding is that parents are kind of going home after attending a talk, talking to their children, and their children are actually confirming that what I've said is happening. So please do talk to your children and find out what's happening. The last bit is that the NUT, which is the National Union of Teachers, and the National Association of Head Teachers, are actually pushing for nursery schools to teach LGBT issues, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans. We know for a fact this is going to be taught to our four-year-olds, but actually there is a drive as well for this to be taught to children as young as 2 years old. You may ask why. I think that's a very logical question that we should all be asking. Basically, the government, I think, have been lobbied by the sex ed organisations and the LGBT organisations under the pretext that society is full of sexual deviation and ills. There's a lot of teenage pregnancies, there's a lot of sexually transmitted diseases, there's a lot of sexual abuse happening. Therefore, we have to safeguard our children. And absolutely, we have to safeguard our children. What's of concern, though, is what is actually unfolding in schools. But as I said, I just want to give you a bit of background information, because a lot of people within our community, as well as teachers themselves, are saying, actually, RSE is not a problem. It's a good thing. Our children need sex education. Absolutely, our children need sex education. But what is coming isn't sex education as we're perceiving it to be. As I said, it may look benign, but I want to give you the greater picture behind it, which that it's not sex education that's teaching about the reproductive cycle and biologically based fact. It's actually a form of education that is introducing a lot of values, a lot of ideologies around sexuality, and actually far kind of surpasses the remit of what a school should be teaching. If we think four-year-olds basically, more often than not, don't know their times tables, they don't even know how to spell the word sexuality, let alone they shouldn't even actually be saying it at that age. Why on earth are you introducing these sexual ideologies into the classroom? The bigger kind of international agenda is something called comprehensive sexuality education. It's currently being pushed through the United Nations with the aim to get it into all schools worldwide by the year 2030. And we're talking Muslim countries as well. They're operating globally. As I said, they've got all the power of the United Nations behind them to get what they want to do into all schools worldwide. I've studied their international curriculum. I've looked at the learning objectives. And when I've looked at that and then looked at what I'm seeing coming in through RSE, there's a parallel there. So I can see what is coming not only into our schools here, which may in some cases look benign, but believe me, there is something far worse that is planned. The roots of the thinking behind introducing kind of mandatory sex ed into schools it's a secular ideology, that's what we're up against, but it has roots in the sexual revolution, the kind of sexual liberation movement, where actually people should be able to do what they want with who they want, when they want. It has roots in a lot, unfortunately, of my field, a lot of psychological theories, and a lot of psychologists have also kind of been perpetuating the idea that children are sexual at birth, which as Muslims we don't disagree with. But what we believe is actually that child has, their innocence has to be protected until the natural awakening during puberty. But these theorists are arguing because a child is sexual at birth, therefore it is a human right to be sexualized. And that is a lot of the thinking behind a lot of what's coming into our schools. There's various other protagonists, which I don't really have time to go into now. There is the eugenics movement, the depopulation movement that aims to kind of cull population growth. And there's a place, an organization called IPPF, International Planned Parenthood, which is the largest NGO behind this compulsory sexuality education. And it is the largest abortion organization in the world. And actually their foothold in the UK, something called FPA, Family Planning Association, something like that. They are actually on the recommended list in the draft guidelines produced by the government on what should be taught in RSE. And I will be showing you some of their resources later. So it's a direct link. Other kind of influence are obviously Marxism and communism, radical feminism, which is very anti-motherhood. Obviously the gay rights movement, the transgender movement. All this thinking is like a torrent. They're like streams or tributaries that have come together in this mass torrent that is actually driving this idea that children need to be sexualized in schools. The reason being, if you sexualize children at a young age, you can actually enslave them to their passions. You're also getting them to rebel against authority, against religion and culture, and you're creating a revolution. And this is actually well documented by various kind of thinkers and academics. If you want to break down society, you atomize the family and you divide parent from child. And what we're seeing with the mandatory introduction of RSE in this country, we can see that's a very firm step. They're taking away parental rights. Okay, those are just, I'm not going to go into it now. I've done a website, all this information is on the website. Those are just a couple of copies of these international documents. So I'm not speaking kind of conspiracy theory, all this is well documented. These are two documents by the United Nations and the World Health Organization detailing the learning objectives of what they want children to be learning in schools at certain ages. And it's actually deeply shocking. Okay, so back to the UK. The current situation in England, as I kind of mentioned, it's very, very vague. We haven't got the finalized guidelines yet. The government have said that they'll have a curriculum ready for September 2019, but yeah, it's still very, very vague. Relationship education in itself isn't all bad. There's going to be aspects such as friendship skills, mental health awareness that are useful. However, it's also going to be used to introduce kind of same-sex relationships and kind of normalise that alongside heterosexual relationships. The problem, though, with RSE, you can read the government guidelines, and this is what a lot of people are doing, and actually going, well, it's not too bad, what's the problem? The problem is RSE is currently providing a gateway to the LGBT organisations and the sex ed organisations to approach schools, train up their staff, and introduce their resources. I've been told by a teacher they're giving actually books away free of charge on the various LGBT ideologies. So that is the danger, and this is a really crucial point that people need to get, because people are going around saying RSE is not a problem, you can take your child out. The right to withdraw is very limited, but as I said, RSE is a gateway. It's basically the government saying, this is the minimum, here's an open door, we'll stand aside and actually let the rest of you come and do the dirty work for us. Okay, that is my opinion, but that in reality is what is happening. It makes it much harder to fight, because it's like trying to catch a slippery fish, because in effect, each school is going to be slightly different. Schools only have to follow the minimal guidelines, which aren't too bad. But the reality is these organisations that are producing these sexualised content are going into schools, and they all sound very nice and very fluffy. There's lots of colourful posters and actually helping schools. And schools are particularly obviously want to appease Ofsted, so they're kind of taking up this offer as well. Regardless of whatever RSE, how RSE or RSE isn't taught in your school, there are, regardless, major kind of causes for concern. Number one is the erosion of parental rights. As I said, RE, or relationship education, is now mandatory for all children from the reception class and upwards. You have no right as a parent now to take your child out of those lessons. The right to take your child out of sex education is becoming increasingly diminished. And there is a legislative loophole that the government have enabled to actually make sex education compulsory at a later stage. Like I said, there is some right to withdraw your child from sex education, but the fact the government had created a caveat to take that right away indicates, in my mind at least, that that is a plan for the future. So we're going to have to be very careful. The other problem is that what I'm seeing in schools is that a lot of the sex ed topics are now being shoehorned into the national curriculum, particularly science lessons, the teaching of the private parts in very explicit ways, often in many schools, is now being taught in national curriculum science lessons. And as parents, you don't have the right to take your children out of national curriculum subjects. I think many people saw there was a clip from the BBC News where they got six-year-olds to write a gay love letter. This is like an English lesson, I'm assuming, you know, practice in writing. So our rights are slipping away and ebbing away. And in many cases, parents are trying to find out their rights at school but are being fobbed off by the schools themselves. I'm not saying this is all schools. I'm just reporting on my own experiences and the experiences of parents that are talking to me. Hopefully you've all signed the petition. If you haven't, please, please do. So a petition was set up about 2-3 weeks ago, simply asking for the government to give parents the right to opt their children out of a relationship and sex education. For me, it's just a fundamental principle. How dare the government take the right away of the parent to actually educate children in the most intimate of matters? This in itself probably isn't going to change much, but it's the point of this is to create awareness and try to get into government or parliament to at least have a debate about it. Because this has been rolled out insidiously. Nobody has voted this in. Nobody has had a say. The majority of parents in this country, whether they're Muslim or non-Muslim, are completely unaware of what their children are learning in schools. And it's shocking. If you want to sign the petition and you haven't, there are details on the website, which I'll give you at the end. We need 100,000 signatures to get it discussed in Parliament. We're up to about 75,000, so we just need that last push to try and get that extra number to at least get it to discussion point. We do have interest from outside the Muslim community as well, and various articles have been written or I've been approached. So, alhamdulillah, there is awareness increasing. but we just need to use this at least to kind of voice our displeasure at what's happening and at least try and get our parental rights back. As I said, it's not going to stop RSE necessarily or what's being pushed, but it's something in the right direction, inshallah. So what I'm kind of going to come on to now is the main concerns that I see in RSE or what's going to be pushed through RSE. So I am a psychologist and I do work across several schools in North London, and that gives me perhaps a certain insight into looking at the resources and knowing how children will respond to them. One of the main concerns, and this isn't just about what's happening in RSE, I've also looked, as I said, at the bigger agenda that's being pushed globally, is that actually it's going to encourage the early sexualization of our children. When you teach children about concepts such as the harms of pornography or consent at a young age, they're concepts that a child is not able to process and understand. And there are resources that have been produced by the sex ed organisations to teach children of as young as five about the harms of pornography. And I will show you some in a moment. But the problem is this is actually psychologically damaging to a children. So in the names of safeguarding children and keeping them safe, actually what they're doing indirectly is potentially sexualising children. And this is deeply disturbing. Children at four should be just playing, ideally, maximum learning their times tables. They should not be looking at different forms of sexual relationships. Also, what happens is when you can't unknow something that you know, so unwittingly, they're actually planting sexual seeds in a child's mind. If a child sees a naked image, that image is going to stay in that child's mind, and they're actually inadvertently potentially going to become sexualized. The graphics that these organizations are producing amount, in my opinion, to cartoon pornography, and I will justify my kind of view in a moment. What they haven't done is paid any consideration whatsoever to child development or the impact that these resources are going to have on the child's mind. I've already had parents saying that their children are coming home distressed from seeing naked genitalia of the opposite gender at a young age. There is no consideration at all that teenagers actually haven't fully developed the capacity to control their impulses, and yet they're giving them very sexual concepts to deal with. There's been no consideration about any of these things at all. The guidelines state whatever schools teach has to be age appropriate. But if you take any one class, the children are going to be at different levels of maturity in any single class. Girls, typically more mature than boys. You get Muslim children that are perhaps in more modest households where they don't see nudity. Then you get children where the parents walk around naked all the time. How can you present resources to, you know, children about teaching the names of the private parts that are actually age appropriate? Because every child is unique. So this is actually a misnomer in itself. And they haven't taken any consideration of that. This is just kind of a caveat. Again, it's repeating what I said earlier, that the government themselves have been quite clever in that they haven't said schools have to use these resources, schools have to teach these concepts. What they've done is been vague, and they've allowed the LGBT organisations and the sex ed organisations to kind of approach schools themselves. However, as I said, there is a recommended resource list on the draft guidelines, and many of the resources I'm going to show you now are produced by the likes of Stonewall and also Family Planning Association, which is, again, deeply disturbing in itself. Highlight schools don't have to use these resources, so the ethos of the head teacher of your child's school is going to be really, really crucial. Okay, so these are some of the resources produced for primary schools. These have been around for a while, and apologies, I've tried to censor the most offending parts of the images as possible. But what I've done a review of some of the resources out there, and basically also considered the learning objectives of the Global Sex Education Agenda, which is this international movement. The resources, basically, in my opinion, are actually encouraging nudity, not modesty. There's a lot of very, very graphic images that children as young as four can be exposed to. And what I said, a lot of this stuff is now being used in the science lessons, so parents can't take their children out. Also, what they're doing is desensitizing children to shame. When a four-year-old if you think our children's at schools for about 12 years, if they go in at 4, come out at 16, 17, if a child is constantly exposed to nudity on a weekly or daily basis, they're going to get used to it. It might be shocking to start with, but actually after a while, it's going to become normal for them. And this is what I mean by what is happening is a social engineering process. In layman's terms, that's basically indoctrination or brainwashing. They're stripping our innocent children's innocence away. It's important and it's true that we have to teach children about body safety to protect them from sexual abuse. This is essential, but there are ways that you can do it. And I would actually argue it's the parents' right to teach their children that because they know their children best. However, it does potentially have a place in school if you do it in the right way. But often what they're doing is teaching mixed classes of boys and girls to either handle plastic models of the private parts, to chant the names, to draw pictures of them, not only of their own gender, but of the opposite gender as well. And this is actually causing a lot of distress. There's also a move to normalize it. So in the kind of the pictures there on the left, you've got like hair, hand, foot, whatever, but also the explicit name of the private parts. Head and hand do not equal private parts. You can go around saying my head hurts, my hand hurts, or whatever. If somebody touches your head accidentally, it's not a problem. Head and hand are very different to the private parts. So what they're trying to do is equate them, and in that sense, it's again sexualizing children or normalizing that the kind of the natural higher that we have is kind of stripped away. There is an incessant focus on the private parts as well, again, looking at the international curriculum and what they've got planned. The guidelines produced by the World Health Organization for Europe, they set out age groups and what they want the children to learn. And this is what they want children from the age of 0 to 4 to learn. So this is 0, a baby until the age of 4 should learn. I'm trying to put it in modest language, but basic babies or toddlers should be encouraged to touch themselves sexually and receive pleasure from it. This is 0 to 4. They actually want to encourage very young children to touch themselves for sexual pleasure. And you can only imagine how it kind of progresses as children get older. And again, the image on the right is about encouraging genital exploration. Again, it's just desensitizing children to the kind of the privacy or the natural modesty that they have built within them. These are kind of in a similar vein, but these are resources, again, produced by an organization in this country for RE, and I'm assuming it's RE. This is, the government are very vague. Actually, does this fall into relationship education or sex education? And I think they're pushing this through relationship education. Because it's teaching about, again, private parts, but also the harms of pornography. So the image on your left is for 4 to 6-year-olds, and it's to teach children about the harms of pornography. So how do you teach children about the harms of pornography? By showing them cartoon pornography in the minds of whoever's creating these resources. The blue squares I've put there for hijab purposes, but actually it's a very explicit drawing that's a full frontal of a naked woman and obviously the back of a naked man. The advice that they're telling teachers to give children is, don't look at this stuff, it's wrong. What they're actually saying is adults can watch pictures like this, older children can watch pictures like this, but you 5-year-old, if you see a picture like this, just tell a grown-up. First, it's not only endorsing older children can watch pornography, it's not saying it's right or it's wrong. That aside, when children are actually confronted with shocking images, they're actually not listening to what the teacher's saying. That image is actually going to be imprinted on the child's mind. And once it's there, it won't go away. And actually, we know pornography is highly addictive. I've worked with children that have been exposed to porn, and the results are actually drastic. The chances are that a child who sees that may go home and Google naked bodies. They might want to go into the playground and look at the bodies of other children in the playground, of siblings. It's highly, highly dangerous and highly, highly irresponsible. And this stuff is allowed into our children's schools. The image on the other side, it says we shouldn't show our private parts outside or let people take photographs. Fair enough. But again, it's the imagery that they're using. I've had to cover it up, but it's a very explicit image of a boy's private parts. Children are just going to see that. And again, who's to say they won't go into the playground and start exploring each other's bodies? And I think people generally know, doesn't take a psychologist to tell you this, that if you tell a child don't do something, the chances are they're going to go and do it. And actually, we know you have to say what you want a child to do, not what you don't want them to do, because the unconscious part of the mind just hears show your private parts in public. It doesn't hear the do not. So actually, what they should be doing is showing children fully clothed or whatever. So again, this is a point that I'd make, that they've had taken no consideration whatsoever of child development or how children learn. Kind of moving on, the other kind of fascination that they seem to have is with contraception. There's really hardly any attention paid to things like chastity or self-control or abstinence until marriage. It's much more don't get pregnant. And how do we not get pregnant? It's obviously in their minds to use contraception. So they generally take children through all the variety of contraception. The condom, excuse my language, is seen as the latex savior, and they are really promoting this in schools and often handing them out free of charge. The thing is, they're saying if you use these contraceptions or barrier methods, you're not going to catch a sexually transmitted disease, which actually isn't completely correct in itself, because there are sexually transmitted diseases that you kind of can contract from just skin contact. So it's highly dangerous. They're kind of presenting it as have as much fun as you want. As long as two of you are consenting, it really doesn't matter about your age. Just don't get pregnant. That is the goal, is just don't get pregnant. Do what you want with who you want, when you want, but just don't get pregnant. And don't worry, if the contraception doesn't work, we've got abortion. And so the reasons they've given for an abortion are, I'm too young to have a child, I want to have my own life, I want a career, it's not the right time for me. We live in an incredibly narcissistic age where we are actually worshipping idol of the self, whether it's a selfie or the iPhone, or it's about me and kind of pleasing myself. This, again, is a secular ideology that actually we're battling against massively on a far kind of broader scale. But there's no consideration for the rights of the unborn child, and about 40 million abortions are carried out on an annual basis. To give you some context, that's actually the population larger than the country of Spain is actually murdered on an annual basis, and nobody gives it any consideration. It's mass murder, basically. Let alone do they teach actually the repercussions of having an abortion. It can lead to depression, anxiety, grief. None of the mental health aspects of it is considered. Let alone that actually if young people engage in an intimate relationship, we kind of have hormones, something called oxytocin, the bonding hormone, that actually if that isn't addressed can actually cause a lot of psychological damage. We're hardwired to connect with people, not to have promiscuous relationships. For girls particularly, this hormone is very active. It's the hormone that's released when you give birth. There's no consideration for actually the attachment needs of the child. That's probably another whole big discussion. But none of this is taught to children in schools. Just as I said, the focus is on just don't get pregnant. So those are just a couple of examples of this ideology that is coming in and that is being promoted by the sex ed organisations. Okay, so if that wasn't bad enough, we're now battling with the promotion and normalization of the LGBT, which is a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender plus ideology, lifestyle, and rights. Their Trojan horse is anti-bullying and the Equality Act. So if you ask them why you're doing this, they will say anti-bullying, LGBT children get bullied. I'm not saying they don't get bullied, and of course we don't condone bullying or discrimination, but I'm sorry, heterosexual children also get bullied. Particular communities such as the black community, we know face far more discrimination than other communities. We could kind of take that into the Muslim community potentially as well. So you have to ask, why is this particular community hogging all the limelight? Anti-bullying actually should be taught far more generically. That's why I say it's a Trojan horse. That is how they're kind of getting into schools. Basically, there's a book here they said it's anti-bullying, but actually they reveal their motives as well. And there's a lovely little book here called How to Transform Your School into an LGBT-Friendly Place. And it's for nursery school, primary school, secondary school. It clearly states that the goal is to smash heteronormativity. Heteronormativity, for the uninitiated, is the assumption that we're all heterosexual, or that is the norm. Basically, they want to equate homosexuality with heterosexuality, and there's a very big drive, a very big movement that is kind of currently in our faces. I think wherever we go, whether it's into the bank or the high street or you put the radio on, they seem to be faced continuously with the promotion of same-sex relationships. This, unfortunately, is going to be taught to four-year-olds. This is mandatory. The government are making this mandatory. They have said LGBT issues have to be taught in schools. It is up to individual schools how they teach it, but they will have to teach it. And they're actually, the government in the guidelines has said they want it taught as integral. What that means is that actually they want LGBT issues woven throughout the whole school curriculum. We already know Pearson, who are one of the main providers or producers of school resources, textbooks or whatever, has already teamed up with Stonewall, who are the main LGBT organisation, and they have committed to actually making all their school resources LGBT friendly. So what does that mean? What does that actually look like? What it means is that your child could be sitting a maths question, so Mr. and Mr. Smith are going on holiday or honeymoon together. They've got to save £1,000 for their honeymoon. They've got £500. How much do they need? That is what I mean by integral, and this is a social engineering process that they are actually feeding this ideology across the whole school curriculum. The gay love letters that I mentioned earlier, that's another example. Not only that, is that we have constant posters everywhere that are plastering the walls of our schools. Again, these are produced by Stonewall. The idea that you might have a mum and a dad, an auntie and an uncle, but you might also have a mum and a mum, or a dad and dad's boyfriend, mum and mum's girlfriend. And they argue that it's all about love. You know, as long as two people love each other, actually nothing else matters. But actually that's a very dangerous argument, because you could have an adult that professes love for a child in a sexual way, and then kind of what actually are we opening the gateway to? The problem is children are seeing these posters on a daily basis. I was talking to my youngest, he was just telling me about what was happening in his school, and I was really shocked. And he said, "Mum, I know you're shocked and I know it's wrong, but the problem is we see this every day, it's normal to us. And this is what is happening." So it's not only what is actually being taught in schools, it's a whole school environment where on a daily basis they're actually seeing it's normal to have two mums or two dads. So it's a far bigger kind of beast that actually we've got to fight than just what is going to be taught through RSE. There are also a plethora of lovely storybooks for our children that they've been busily working away on. And I have got my little book collection here, which you can have a look at afterwards or in the break. But again, just explain it from a psychological perspective and how the social engineering works. So we've got here, And Tango Makes Three, which the book at the bottom there. And that's about two lovely fluffy penguins who are homosexual. And it's based on a true story, just to kind of warm your heart even more. And they basically adopt a random egg. This is for sort of probably 2 to 3 year olds. Children generally love penguins, okay? So they're gonna love a story about two fluffy penguins who just happen to be gay. So you get that in their mind. You then progress to fairy tales as children get slightly older. You know, the good old kind of Cinderella or prince and princess get married. Not any longer, we've got king and king now. So this is a fairy tale of a prince who was trying to get married. He couldn't find a princess he liked, but that he then fell in love with the brother of the princess. The queen was against it at first, but she then came round and she even shed a tear at the wedding. There is a sequel to this where they go on honeymoon and adopt a child. I haven't bought that yet. Okay, so we then move on to more concrete Heather Has Two Mummies, which is just a story about a little girl who happens to have two mummies. There's similar ones for whoever has kind of two daddies. If you think a child has perhaps read those stories over a year or something, it's slowly kind of moulding their views and their beliefs about what relationships are. And that's why I'm saying it's so insidious and actually so highly dangerous. This is, again, I'm looking at the process of what they're doing, not just the content. But these books are in schools, and a teacher actually told me that they give them away for free. So these organizations are approaching schools with all these free storybooks to have into their schools. All these books are basically recommended by Stonewall, and Stonewall is recommended strongly by the UK government in the RSE guidelines. So you can just kind of see there's a direct link between it. So the promotion of same-sex relationships, equating them with heterosexual relationships, is coming, and it is mandatory. As I said, how the school teacher is up to the individual school. The T bit, so we've got the LGB section, and then the T bit is the transgender, and actually there's a lot of infighting between the same-sex lot and the transgender, and actually the LGBs hate the fact the T's have kind of piggybacked on them. But this is, I could do a whole talk on gender identity in itself, because it's a highly aggressive movement, and it's, in psychological opinion, it's a mass delusion, it's a mass psychosis. Actually, if you look at the definition of delusion, it equates what this transgender lot are doing. It's not to take away the fact that there are a minority of people in the world who have something called gender dysphoria, which is a mental condition, or have the intersex condition where they're born with both genitalia. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this mass movement that is getting children in schools to question their gender, that is giving the rights of a man to turn up at a mosque, wear a hijab, keep his beard, say he feels like a woman, and actually he's then given the right to sit with a woman or enter the women's only swimming. I'm not making this up. This is how absurd it has got. More and more laws are being passed all the time regarding this. Again, the government has stated that this has to be taught in schools. And again, just kind of looking, basically, it's all about being yourself. Again, it's a secular ideology. Be yourself, do what you want, forget biology, forget scientific fact. If you feel like that, then that's what you are, and that's what your right to be is. The way they tend to introduce it into schools is through challenging gender stereotypes. That in itself isn't a problem. Boys can be cooks and girls can be scientists. We all know that. But this is the beginning of how they're getting children to slightly think differently about their gender. And again, from a psychological perspective, young children, particularly under the age of 7, have got no idea about the concept of gender. If they see a man in a dress, they will think it's a woman. They don't understand it's a man underneath. So actually, they're causing mass confusion. And if a child is told they're a boy at home, and then they go to school and the teacher says, well, you can be a girl if you want. I mean, what is that kind of impact? What's the impact of that going to be on that child's mental state? I predict a mass increase in kind of anxiety, depression, identity confusion. But perhaps that's what they want. The books, again, there's a lovely selection at the front. Are you a boy or are you a girl? They've got very subtle ones, like this one here, which is, it's a red crayon that believes it's blue. So, and by the end of the book, all the other crayons in the pack accept it for the kind of blue crayon it believes it is. So it's just a very simple story about crayons and colours, but it's giving that message. It's about what you feel is more important than actually what you are. They then kind of move on, and actually the three books I'm showing you, there was one child who was exposed to these three books over the course of a year. And by the end of the year, they had a coming out party for him because he decided he wanted to be the other gender. This is one, again, teddy bears, and it's Thomas the Teddy took a deep breath. I need to be myself. I've underlined that because that's what the message is. I've always known I was a girl Teddy, not a boy Teddy. I wish my name was Tilly, not Thomas. And it's a teddy bear that has a bow tie, and by the end of the story, it's got a hair bow. So it's a transgender teddy. So they've had the crayon story, they've had the transgender teddy story, and then they move on to this one, something called I Am Jazz. And this is a true story, and she's got lots of videos on YouTube. It's a boy that transgendered to a girl, and basically her whole life is on YouTube. They failed to actually tell you that she's on antidepressants, and I think probably got various psychological problems going on. So after those three books, there was an incidence of one child actually transgendering, and they all celebrated that in school and gave him, I think, a tutu to wear or something like that. these posters are popping up everywhere as well. They're by the charity Metro, and a parent was actually telling me this charity came into their school unbeknownst to parents, and kind of giving LGBT themed assemblies as well. So that's another charity you're going to have to watch out for. But it's a genderbred person, and it's basically teaching children that actually their sexual attraction, what they feel and what their brain can all be different. And there is this kind of, in this I Am Jazz in particular, it says I've got a girl's brain and a boy's body. So they're kind of pushing the narrative that actually some malfunction has gone on in heaven, where either a God's got it wrong or the jinn are getting involved and actually putting the wrong brains in the wrong bodies. So this is a narrative that I've got a girl's brain in a boy's body, or I've got a boy's brain in a girl's body. There's no scientific evidence whatsoever to back up that claim. As I said, it's an emotional argument they're using, that actually what you feel is more important than anything else. So that's a very kind of brief synopsis of what's coming in. With older children, they get them to question their sexuality. So I've looked at some of the lesson plans, and it's about getting children, even as young as 10, 11, to actually question their sexuality. I was talking to a teacher on Friday, and she said in the school she works in, they've got an LGBT person who sits in a nice, colourful room. If the teachers see a child they think might be gay or whatever, they push the child to this lovely, kind of friendly person in their nice, colourful room to talk to them. This, unfortunately, is going on in our schools. Not all our schools, and as I said, the government haven't said all this stuff has to be taught the way I'm explaining to you. But in reality, and what I'm seeing and what parents are telling me is this is happening, and in some cases far worse than I've kind of mentioned. So RSE in itself, if you read the guidelines, may look not too bad. The point is it's a gateway for these organisations to come into schools. Why maybe schools lap up this stuff? Possibly because they're buying the argument that children have to learn all these things, and they've got these lovely colourful resources for free. They're also under incredible pressure from Ofsted. And I found out actually last week that the head of Ofsted is a former head of Stonewall. So you can kind of see the link there. Ofsted are actually pushing schools to promote LGBT, particularly private schools. And this is actually a real issue for our private Islamic schools. They want schools to promote it, not just teach it. They're trying to get powers to go through locked cupboards to kind of see if there's any anti-LGBT propaganda. And the reality is schools are scared of Ofsted and will go that extra mile just to appease them. If you're knowledgeable in Ofsted, there are loopholes that actually as people of religion you can argue against, but the majority of schools, the majority of people don't know these loopholes. So it actually takes somebody who's very knowledgeable in the area within a school to kind of fight this. But we know that a Jewish school's been failed three times for refusing to teach LGBT. So we've got an additional problem, not only of RSE, but also of Ofsted as well, which is making the whole thing far harder. I'm not going to go into this now. I'm just want to flag up as a community, we do have to think about LGBT Muslims. There are an increasing number of our young people that are turning to same-sex relationships. We have to think how to work with this community, not ostracize them, not condone what they're doing, but actually we have to think realistically, how are we going to work with this group within our community? The other issue that's come up is a lot of Muslims are feeling they have to support the LGBT communities because we're all minorities, therefore we have to kind of scratch each other's backs. No, you don't. There's nothing to stop us supporting them in basic human rights or, you know, fairness of treatment in jobs and employment, but we do not have to champion their rights for same-sex relationships because that is actually a fundamental sin within our religion. A lot of Muslims are getting caught up in that. So we have to be very wary of these emotional arguments that are being used to kind of manipulate our minds. As I said, it's coming from a very secular ideology, kind of basically do what you want. There's quite a pertinent quote there, which is the real revolutionary revolution is to be achieved not in the external world, but in the souls and the flesh of human beings. And I've said it before, we're often focused, and rightfully so, on the horrendous external wars that are taking place in Yemen, in Syria, in Palestine, you know, various places around the world. And absolutely, we have to focus on those and fight those cases. What I want to flag up is actually there's an equally dangerous, if not far more insidious war that is actually a moral war and a spiritual war that is actually being waged in the hearts and minds of our children. When we send our children off to schools, we're trusting that they're in a safe place. What is happening now is actually those places are being used as kind of camps to indoctrinate the minds of the next generation. Like I said, it is a revolution, because if you get children sexualized, you can control and manipulate them, and you can turn them against parent and actually break down the family structure. So, in my opinion, this isn't about education. This is an ideological indoctrination that's happening. The aim is to deconstruct and redefine sexual and gender and family norms. They're not saying, let's break down family. They're just saying, actually, this is family, mummy and mummy, or daddy and daddy. They're actually reconstructing it in their own way. They're actually promoting high-risk sexual behaviours by exposing children, encouraging them to experiment with contraception. Sexualization, I've mentioned. They're eroding our moral and religious codes because actually they're very anti-religion, and they're getting young children to question their own religions by saying, so what do you think about that? What does your religion say? Okay, but what's your opinion on that? So it's that very subtle kind of questioning. Mentioned they're undermining parents' rights to raise their children in line with their own values and morals, and they're creating rootless individuals that are very easy to control and manipulate. So I forgot the E on the end of manipulate there. So that's kind of what the problem is. I'm just aware of time, and I do want to try and get through what actually you can do, because I think there's a big and understandable sense of defeatism in our community. Oh my God, this is coming. We can't do anything. Or we just have to run away. And actually, it's really important that we at least think about strategically and calmly what we can do. And I've just tried to think of a way forward. It is a starting point. I don't have the solutions. But I think basically it's a two-pronged approach, which is that we need to resist and prepare. We need to resist this agenda. And we can do this in schools by becoming actively involved in the schools and saying, actually, we don't want these resources. We don't want these organizations teaching our children. We can sign the petition, try and get it to Parliament. We can mount our own campaigns. Long-term, perhaps, we can do evidence, kind of based research as well, about the harms of exposing children to these things. But in the meantime, while we're kind of fighting on the front line, we've got to prepare our children, whether they're homeschooled, sent to school, a state school, Islamic school. We still have to prepare our children, because they are actually living in a world where they're bombarded by this stuff all the time. So we need to equip our children with Islamic ideological and rational arguments, critical thinking skills. So when they're faced with these agendas and these behaviours, actually they have got the intellectual understanding to actually deconstruct them themselves and actually provide a counter-argument. Obviously, this is going to be slightly older children, teenagers, but it's incredibly essential that we give them the thinking skills actually to combat these ideologies. It's also incredibly important to form in them a sense of Islamic identity. So actually they feel proud as Muslims. They know their faith, who they are, and they're not going to succumb to the Western model or the Western ideal. There's various other things at various other meetings I've had, which has talked about perhaps developing an Islamic RSE curriculum, where therefore we can kind of counteract what they're being taught in schools. I think there's going to be a massive need for community initiatives, for youth work. So I urge centres to kind of start thinking about workshops they can run for the youth, whether that's just drawing in the community, forging that Islamic identity, or if it's tackling issues such as pornography or LGBT in our community. Parents are going to need a lot of support in this as well. Parents are going to have to talk to their children about these issues. We're at the point now we can't afford to be shy or embarrassed. I know it is really embarrassing, but we are going to have to talk to our children, because if we don't, as I said, the schools are going to be planting the seeds in the heart of our children. But parents do need support with that. So we need resources, we need workshops, we need experts in the field to kind of come forward to try and provide those resources for the parents. options to consider, obviously, Islamic schools. Everyone's saying we need more Islamic schools, and the reality we is. Obviously, there's funding and all these issues. I'm not going to go into it now. There is obviously the option of homeschooling, which Sister Seema is going to talk to you about at the end, which is it's an immediate kind of solution in the sense you don't have to teach RSE. However, it doesn't negate the fact we're still going to have to talk to our children about these issues. Know your rights. It's when we want to resist in schools, it's essential that we know our rights as parents. On the website, it's basically everything I'm talking about is on the website, and there's a detailed page on parental rights. But I just want to kind of reiterate, I've gone through the draft guidelines, and parents do have some rights. So you do have the right to withdraw your children from RSE up until September 2020. As I said, after that, RE will become compulsory, and sex education is compulsory with some options to opt out. As parents, you do have the right to become involved in how schools will teach RSE and also to develop the policy. So as parents, what I'd urge you to do is to actually contact your schools, find out what your child's learning, talk to the head teacher, ask them how they propose to roll out RSE. You're allowed to see the resources. You're allowed to see the policy, get involved with the policy. If you're governors or teachers, even better, you can have more clout. You're allowed to ask for a workshop on RSE to discuss your opinions with the school. This is clearly set out in the government guidelines. So if schools fob you off, don't let them print off the guidelines and actually highlight the relevant points and take it in and show it to the head teacher. You can ask any question you like about RSE. That is your right, according to the government. The other point to know is that actually, as people of religion, we do have some rights. Again, the government guidelines say that sensitive, inverted commas, issues can be taught, but the school has to take into consideration the religious background of the children. So if the school is doing gay pride marches, I'm sorry, that actually is contradicting your religious right as a parent. So you can ask the school, how are they proposing to teach LGBT? And it is your right as a parent to say, actually, this same-sex relationships are against my religion, so I want you to consider that when you're teaching my child. It's very important that we push our religious rights, because actually we're covered by the Equality Act as much as the LGBT lot are, but we don't know our rights or we're shy to assert them. And I think, again, talking to parents, their experience is because we're Muslim or we wear hijabs, the women, that the schools fob us off a lot. And I was talking to one parent who's been trying to fight this in her school, and the head teacher actually said, your community's backward. So we know there's prejudice out there. The point is, know your rights, and as people of religion, we also have equal rights to the LGBT community. Faith schools, obviously, will faith schools have to teach this? Yes, they will. RSE is compulsory across all schools. However, there is some flexibility, and actually faith schools are allowed to teach their faith perspective on things such as homosexuality. So we can teach an Islamic perspective on homosexuality. However, we have to demonstrate there's what they call balanced debate, and that we're not going against the Equality Act. So we have to prove that we're discussing it in a fair and balanced manner. Schools will have to teach LGBT, but that is fundamental. How we teach it, we've got some movement, but we will still have to teach same-sex relationships exist in UK law and are legal. But as I said, we can teach our faith perspective on it as well. So kind of private schools or Islamic schools rather going to have to get their heads together and think about how to approach this subject from kind of a creative but kind of balanced perspective. As I said, I keep saying it's coming into play in 2020, but schools are already introducing it and they're actually encouraged to do so. Some of this I've kind of gone through, that it's really important that we resist in schools. This is the kind of the fighting component of it. To kind of support parents, what I've done is I've written a template letter, which you can download from my website. It basically asks for your right if you choose to get involved in the RSE policy development of your school. It asks the school to inform you exactly of what your child is learning, when they're learning it, and to see the resources that the school is going to be used. So just to kind of give you a start, you can download that letter, you can amend it as you wish, and send it into your school at least to find out what your child is learning. This is crucial. if you find things like this hard on your own, group together with other parents. And I would actually kind of urge parents to group together, because as a collective voice, you're going to have far more impact than a single voice. Particularly for those of us in London or the surrounding areas, as most schools, state schools, have a high percentage of Muslim children. That's a voice actually the head teacher can't refuse to listen to. It's almost got to get to a point where they see you coming and they think, oh my God, it's just easier not to invite that charity in because they know you're going to give them a headache. That's your right to do that. And actually, you've perhaps got to be the proverbial thorn in the side of the head teacher just to get your message across that you're not happy about this, because it is your right to protest. So really important that more of a group is going to have a more of an impact than a single person. As I've had said, you know, you can say we don't want these resources, but what we've also got to think about is, are we going to offer anything as an alternative? Because it's one thing to say we don't want that, but we've got to be a bit more prepared than that and say, actually, this resource perhaps could be used. Just to give a concrete example, the issue of teaching children about body safety and private parts, the NSPCC have got something called the Pants Programme. It's dinosaur in boxer shorts, and they call it private parts. There's no naked imagery. There's no explicit terminology. And it gives teaches children how to protect themselves from sexual abuse, basically, but in a very modest, child-appropriate way. So I would suggest, as an example, you could say to the school, we don't want these graphic images or models of private parts. Use the NSPCC's Pants Programme, because actually it ticks a tick box that they need to do. Slowly what I am doing is trying to compile a list of alternate resources that are already out there that actually parents can suggest to schools, or at least use themselves as well. I've briefly mentioned other options for schooling. I won't go into it now because of time. Islamic schools, is it a reality? Can we build more Islamic schools? We certainly need them. Is there the funds available? And then how do we get around the problems of Ofsted as well? So those are some of the problems that are coming up. However, if you're sending your child to school, an Islamic school is always going to be far, far better than a state school, because there'll be a morality there and they can at least teach their faith perspective on things such as same-sex relationships. The other option is home education, which I'm going to leave to Sister Seema to talk about. There are various kind of questions around that, but I will leave that for Seema to talk about with you, inshallah. One thing I really want to bang home is actually we've got to take responsibility for our own children. And it's completely understandable. Parents are often going, oh my God, madrasa, you sort it out, or you know, somebody else sort it out, or can I sort it out? I can't sort it out, I'm one person. Ultimately, the buck stops with us. On Judgment Day, as a parent, we're going to be the ones that are questioned about what did we do to protect our children from this. Basically, there are various ways to do that, which I'm sure you all know far better than I do, but it's actually taking active part in your Islamic, in your child's Islamic education, not just leaving it to a Sunday or a Saturday at madrasa. It's not sufficient anymore. We're living in very different times now. We've got to actively teach our children the Islamic values and ideals at home on a continual basis. The other thing, if you know your child is going to be learning a concept such as same-sex relationships in school next week, you're going to have to talk to them first. You can't leave it to the school. Basically, you know you're going to have to, as a parent, have that discussion with your child first, so at least they're prepared and at least you've put it into an Islamic context for them. Children are getting distressed because they're being sent off to school, being exposed to graphic images, coming home in tears. That's still wrong, but at least as a parent, if you can get in there first and say, look, you might be learning this at school. If you can't keep your children off school, if you can keep your children off school, that's the best thing. But you've got to prepare your children for what they're going to be learning in schools if you're sending your children to school. There are various kind of views on that. Some people say, well, why don't you just let the child naturally come to you with questions? And I would say in an ideal world, that is the best, let it naturally unfold. But like I said, if you know your child is learning something in school next week, you have to get in there first. The main thing, though, as a parent, is that you build those close bonds with your child or your teenager so that they become the main attachment figure that they have. when they have that bond and attachment, they will come to you. They will come to you and tell you what they're doing and what they're up to. They will tell you any concerns they have. And the research has also shown this. And actually, as a parent, you do have more influence than any teacher, as long as you're having those ongoing discussions with your child and you're building those bonds of attachment with them. This is the one thing that actually we can all do, whether it's spending half an hour before bed with a child or, you know, going for walks at the weekend with them, just letting them talk to you. Building those close relationships is what is actually going to save your child, because they will come to you, the parent, for guidance, as opposed to being kind of sidelined by peers or teachers. The main question I get asked is, how do I talk to my child about these things? And that is, yeah, that's kind of it, really. I think local communities do need to come together and talk, whether it's a centre or a mosque or an area, and come together, think, what can we do to support our local community? Can we do workshops with parents? Can we create resources to help parents with these discussions? Personally, I have started working on stuff. I've started trying to write some storybooks and parental guides on, if your child says this, you can say that. I'm doing that when I have the spare time, but what I'm doing is never going to be enough on its own. Local communities have got to come together and actually take the action to do something for themselves, and I'm very happy to support you with that. But the onus is on you. There have been talks about developing an Islamic RSE curriculum to roll out across the madrasas. Again, that's something I've been looking at. But I'm now taking the tack that actually the local madrasas need to come up with something themselves, and I will kind of consult with you and then help you with that, because there's a massive amount of work that needs to be done. What I said at the bottom there, there is, if people want to leave their emails and their phone numbers, there is an email database that I'm collecting, that I'm trying to get a newsletter going just to update people on what's happening or what resources can be used. I also have a Stop RSE WhatsApp group, which is purely admin only. It's just where I post updates about any talks that are happening, any progression on the petition, any relevant newspaper articles. If people want to be added to that, they can either email me or they can just give me their number at the end on a piece of paper. The main thing before anything is to create awareness. As I said, it's great you're all here tonight and hopefully you're slightly more informed than you were, but the majority of people are still ignorant. They don't know what's happening through no fault of their own, because it is such an insidious agenda that's come in that nobody voted for, nobody had a say about. So educate yourself about RSE. Hopefully you've learned something tonight. There is a website which I'll give you the details of, but just become aware and educate yourself and how your child's school is going to roll this out as well. Speak to your friends, speak to your family, tell other parents at school. You can always arrange for RSE talks. And as I said, get local community groups together. Even if it's just you with a few families or family friends, think collectively about what you can do to kind of protect your children against this. You could try asking your local imam or scholar or ulama to kind of help you. It depends. But yeah, just create awareness and spread the message, basically. And please tell people to sign the petition as well. Takeaway points, because I know I've had to bombard you with a lot of information. And as I said, I usually like it to be more interactive with questions, but we're constrained by time, and I'm sure I've gone over already. The situation isn't great. It's pretty dire, and it is dangerous. We can't shy away from that. However, there is something we can do about it. Shaitan wants us to feel helpless and powerless, and that this is a foregone conclusion. Nothing's foregone, and actually Allah can create and do anything that he wants. And I always think of the analogy of the Battle of Badr. You know, actually, there was a small group of believers, and they saw the enemy, but Allah brought the help. So as long as we do our bit and tie our camel, inshallah, you know, Allah will bring the help where it's needed. So it's really important to hold that in mind and trust in Allah. So takeaway points, take responsibility for your child. It's your child, nobody else's. You are the primary educator. We're all fighting for our parental rights, but actually twinned with that is we have to take responsibility for our children as well. Send the letter to the school. You can download it from the website to find out what your child is learning. This is the first step you need to do. Form local groups, as I keep mentioning, to discuss solutions. Don't wait for some outside entity to suddenly kind of zoom in and provide the solution, because it's not going to happen that way. You've got to take kind of action yourself locally. As alternatives to state education, you can consider Islamic schools, you can consider home education. One thing you can do, at least if your children are young, is delay sending them to school until the age of 7, if that's possible within your family situation. Because we know Islamically, up until the age of 7, children should actually just be playing. And we also know psychologically that actually children fare far better if they're allowed to play for those first 7 years. And as I said at the beginning, the foundations of the personality and beliefs are actually formed in those early crucial years. That is when the seeds are sown or the stone is carved. It will also give you the opportunity to form those strong attachments and bonds with your child. That means that you will be the go-to person that they come to when they're faced with the onslaught, whether it's at school or in the outside world. So those are just some key points. If this is all too much for you, just implement those 4 points or two or three of those points, and then you've at least started to tie your camel. Please sign the petition. I keep banging on about it. Like I said, the government one is the one that we need 100,000 signatures for. Even if you signed it, please spread awareness, not just with your Muslim friends and colleagues, but non-Muslims as well. We've got, you know, there's a lot of interest from the non-Muslim community who are equally unaware of what's happening. So please try and let's get us up to 100,000, inshallah. Summary, people are welcome to take a photo. What you can do, encourage parents to resist in schools. Resist yourself, encourage others to resist in schools. We need to educate and support the parents in talking to their children. As parents, you need to take that initiative as well, but we need to kind of think about how we're going to do that. We need far more youth and community initiatives to strengthen the community and to form that sense of Islamic cohesion and identity. Because as a community, we are under attack, not just from RSC. There are other things such as Prevent. There are other things such as this integration policy that's going through. And actually, when you start to kind of look, we are, as a community, under attack. Not to make ourselves victims, but actually we need to fight back on this and be proud of our identity and our beliefs. And know that Allah is with us as well. Support home educating families, develop home educating groups. Again, I won't go into that now, but we do as a community need to support the home educating families far more. We can develop a madrasa or an Islamic RSC counter curriculum where children can be inoculated through the madrasa system as well to support parents. And build more Islamic schools if it's realistic or feasible. Hopefully, if we can implement these things, we will create children with a strong Islamic identity who are able to critically understand, resist, and defend themselves against the onslaught, inshallah. And this is really important. We can't escape from this agenda. Wherever we are, it's going to be there, because as I said, it is a mass global movement. We've got to inoculate our children so actually they can defend against it. Finally, that is my contact details. The website is www.stoprsc.com. Majority of the information I've talked about tonight is on the website, plus various articles. There is an associated Facebook page and the petition. There's a clear link to the petition as well on the front page of the website. The email is info@stoprsc.com. You are welcome to email me and I will get back to you, but please be patient as well, because there's quite a lot coming in, but I will respond to everybody that contacts me, inshallah. So that is the end of the presentation. I've probably gone over time. Yeah, I'd love to take questions, but we have to do that at the end. Yeah, okay. And in the break or afterwards, all the lovely storybooks, do feel free to come and have a read. Inshallah. Thank you very much.
Can we have a loud salawat for Dr. Kate?